Okay, I'd like to take some time now and talk about some of the businesses in Brooklyn, those owned by the African Americans in the community and those owned by white individuals in the community, maybe some places you went to eat or went to shop that you can remember.
Well, I don't know too much about the businesses in Brooklyn because I lived in Cherry. And I can only remember two businesses in Cherry. There's the one on Baldwin and Baxter Street. And I think it was owned by a white person, but in the building, in the back of the building, it was another little shop, like it was operated by a black. But I don't know if, I think the white person owned the building and just gave them that part to use. And then there was just a grocery store up Baldwin Avenue, and it was owned by white. So we didn't really have any black businesses in Cherry. We really had to go out of Cherry sometimes to shop to get certain things.
Did you go into Brooklyn to do that?
I did.
Yes. Yeah, my parents would go to Brooklyn to shop.
Most of the neighborhoods had little grocery stores, neighborhood grocery stores, and they in Brooklyn they had several of those, and they were owned by whites, and of course they ran a little tab, a little bill, you know, you could charge, you know, whatever you would get and pay for it, you know, weekly or whatever, but we did have an area of Brooklyn that was on Second Street where you had your black businesses, you had. We had the Queen City, you know, drugstore, pharmacy that was owned by blacks. We had Isla Drug was there too. We had the shoe shop. Had a shoe shop that was run by Mr. McKissick. Had a shoe shop in that area. You had barber shop, beauty shops. You had. I'm going to let Price tell you about Frig, what's the cafes they call them instead of restaurants we call them now, but cafes. And then they had a place of entertainment called the Green Willow Garden, where they would have dances, and we were too young to go there. They wouldn't have, they had little holes in the fence, so somebody had put.
What about the theater?
Yeah,
the
theater. But which was also owned by whites, but run by blacks.
But you also, you name it, you had it right there on Second Street. Mm-hmm. Now, I have just become of that age where I'm ready to chase the girls and to go to the movie and be out a little after dark. And on Second Street, I found Second Street to be very fascinating because you had funeral homes there, you had speakeasies, you had cafes, you had Friends, taxi cab place. These are all black owned businesses.
What's a speakeasy?
The speakeasy was where you rang the doorbell and you look up and the guy would drop you the key and you open the door, go upstairs, make sure the door's closed behind you, go upstairs and buy yourself a drink of alcohol.
10 cents.
It cost 10 cents. It cost 10 cents a drink because Charlotte was dry. And it was hard to get a drink of alcohol for those who wanted alcohol unless you knew the sheriff very well. The sheriff was the only one that had the alcohol. But you had cafes, and I'm glad that Birdman mentioned that because the cafes were equivalent to what you would call a sidewalk cafe, especially the Green Willow Garden. The Green Willow Garden, you walk in, at the first part of it was the cafe like. You walk out into the backyard is where they had the chairs and the tables and the umbrellas and whatnot, and they had the entertainment back there, the dancing and whatnot, the entertainment. Even had a couple of boxing matches back there that I went to. I mean, prize fight boxing matches. But you could find anything on Second Street that you wanted. All black-owned businesses. I'm trying to think if there was a white-owned business on Second Street, and one doesn't come to my mind right now. No, I've got, they were all white owned business, all except the theater. I think the theater was white owned.
Owned, but run by blacks.
But it was run by blacks.
Only the church. Only the church.
And yeah, there was a church here right close to it also. And like I say, you had a taxicab was run by Fred Moore. Was it Fred Moore? I hate to call names because I may be calling it wrong. But there was a black owned taxicab business there. Yeah. And you had it must have been a bakery, like right there, down below Caldwell Street, right on the right hand side there. Mm-hmm. The man would cook. It was like a bakery. He done it out of his house, I think. But you had everything there on Second Street that you wanted to find.
He had Second Street Dwiggins grocery store too.
Grocery store.
Black owned.
Yeah. Second Street was a place like to make a comparison. It was like Fifth Avenue, New York, on Easter Sunday morning. If anybody's ever been to Fifth Avenue, I don't think they do that anymore. Stroll around Fifth Avenue on Easter Sunday morning to show off, to be seen and to see. Second Street was the place to go. That's where business deals were made. I'm not talking about shady business deals. I'm talking about this is where black businessmen got together and talked and sit in the cafes and discuss business and whatnot. It was a fascinating place back in those days. Very fascinating.
Publication House.
Yes.
The Brevard Street Library, the first library.
Yes.
For blacks.
Absolutely.
And Calvin mentioned the church, Ebenezer Church.
Absolutely.
In Brooklyn. We had quite a few churches. I think you said off record, but that we had 12 of the 13 churches. There were 13 churches, I think, in that area. But 12 of them were done away with during urban renewal. I know we'll get to urban renewal. But I want to say something about the grocery store, the Dwiggins grocery store. That was I guess you'd call him a butcher. His name was James. And my grandfather lived on the farm, raised hogs and, you know, and all kinds of animals and some chickens and whatever. But in eastern part of the state, down in Tarboro, and every year he would, when he killed hogs, he would send the hog, put it on the train. I don't know how they refrigerated, whatever they did. But James would always come to Stowall or Independence Center, which it was called during that time, on our back porch, and cut up that hog, you know, separate all the parts. We'd have sausages and we'd have the hams, you know, you had to hang up. And also, it was interesting to watch him do that. And after Second Street was gone, James went to the Puritan Market. Do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
On College Street, I think it is. But anyway, I remember it was just fascinating to see him, you know, work with that hog, and we would have meat to eat all winter. But that was interesting.
You had J.C. Graham there.
Yeah,
First Street.
Yeah. Across from the
Crossing the second floor.
No, but I'll tell you what was on McDowell Street that fascinated me. I remember when the Fatback King was on
Oscar Harris
on McDowell Street next to the theater there, and you call him the Fatback King because he fried all this fatback and laid in the window, and you go there and get a fatback.
White ham, they call it.
Call it white ham.
Really?
And that was, and when I finally came back, retired, came back, I saw the Fatback King had moved over into the But the Fatback King, but that's where your action was, your really business action in Brooklyn was the Fatback, was in on Second Street. A little bit on First Street.
Yeah.
And McDowell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Johnny.
But there's something else that I don't want to leave out that is very, very important. And this is back in the day. You did not have the button that you push and your house got nice and warm. You had the cold man, the wood man,
and the ice man.
The cold man and the wood man, they had the, and they'd come around at night on a cold night, wood man, cold man, and sell it, and a bag of cold cost you a quarter, bag of wood cost you a quarter. Mm-hmm. And your ice, you got a sign from the ice company, would have 50, 75, 100, yeah, and you'd go out on the porch in the morning and turn that up for what you want the ice man to leave. If he come around, he didn't have to ask you what you wanted. He'd look at that sign, and the sign said 50 pounds. He'd chop you off 50 pounds and lay 50 pounds on your porch there.
I mentioned El Chico, which was on McDowell Street. It was right up above the, that was the place where when we had dances, you know, all the fraternities and, you know, sororities and place people would have dances. And that was the place everybody went for breakfast after the dance. Mm-hmm. The Kappas had what they call a Kappa Dawn dance, and it was an all-night thing, dawn. And, of course, everybody gathered at El Chico, which was in Brooklyn, too.
Now, the House of Prayer was the highlight.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
On McDonald's.
On McDonald's.
Yes. Mm-hmm. There was a restaurant right above it.
El Chico.
That was El Chico.
She's talking about first class. Mm-hmm. Ingram on it.
Ingram was the first, one of the first blacks in Charlotte to own a Cadillac, because he went here to try to buy it. And what's this Cadillac company here? And they wouldn't sell it to him. And he went to Washington, D.C. to pick it up, because I was going to ride up there with him. This Cadillac up. He was one of the first blacks in Charlotte to own a Cadillac. Really? Yes, he was.
Well, these businesses are gone now. Mm-hmm. We have come to the part of urban renewal. Mm-hmm. The first question is a very personal question. Mm-hmm. What does urban renewal mean to you?
To me, urban renewal means black removal.
Now you got it.
That's what it means.
That's good. That's
to me. All over the country.
Mm-hmm. And how does it make you feel? Angry.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Angry.
Because they said there would be no more churches down in this in Brooklyn.
So and
the first thing you see is you have First Baptist. I'm not the man. First Baptist. I sound like I'm angry, but I'm not. I can die now and go.
We can't put our hands on anything that during this era that, you know, remains. It means that you have taken away from me. You have taken away my heritage. Because at some point you should be able to recapture things. You know, it should be there. Something to remind you, you know. But it was all taken away.
And I just
and we didn't have a say-so.
Yeah. No say-so. There was some good, rich black heritage out there.
Yeah.
Wright mentioned the yellow house that I lived in. He used to walk by.
Yeah.
That's where I grew up. Born and raised, and that house was taken during urban renewal. My dad and Mr. Blake, who was had a beautiful house, beautiful house on First Street, was the principal of West Charlotte. And of course, the two of them stayed much longer than some of the other people trying to get more money from the city for their property. Mm-hmm. Because people, the money that they were given, see, a lot of those people were of age where they were not able to go out and start over, you know, and they were not given enough money to relocate to have the kind of housing that they had. Okay. So that was what was so discouraging. And so my dad and Mr. Blake stayed as long as they could to finally, they got a little more one time, then they stayed longer and they gave them a little bit more. Finally, they got a notice that the bulldozer will be there on Monday morning, and your checks will be downtown if you want to come and pick them up. But the bulldozer was coming anyway. So, but see, a lot of those people had to move into the projects. You know, they moved to places like Earl Village and Fairview Homes. And you see, what has happened to those people, they've been uprooted again. You know, just because They changed Earl Village, you know, and had mm-hmm. people to move out. Of course, they claimed they have affordable housing. Of course, those people had to go someplace. Had to go someplace again.
They can't afford it.
They can't afford it. Mm-hmm. Now they're talking about rebuilding Second Ward neighborhood and putting in, you know, putting in some of the shops and the streets and stuff that, and coming up with affordable housing. But affordable for whom?
Yes.
That's the question. That's, you know, it's not going to be for us. You know, the majority of the people that were, you know, relocated, dislocated, or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, you brought up two other points. I wanted to talk about the property compensation and this bidding process I've been hearing about, and about where did some of the businesses relocate, the churches relocate, if they were able to. And I think those kind of go hand in hand.
Most of the churches did relocate.
We are still downtown. Mm-hmm. First United Presbyterian mm-hmm. College and 7. Mm-hmm. Little Rock is still downtown.
Those are the only two blocks.
Grace and Zion.
Yeah, but they relocated. They bought.
They have moved in. Bob Davis's church.
Mount Moriah.
They're the only churches I know downtown.
But a lot of the churches moved to this side. Brooklyn Presbyterian and Stonewall. 7th Street and Brooklyn merged.
Uh-huh.
And then Stonewall was on Stonewall Street. They are right up the street.
Yeah, up here on Grove.
And Friendship is on this side.
Mm-hmm.
What else? Emmanuel Congregation.
Yeah, it was
right up the street.
House of Prayer.
Ebenezer.
They went downtown.
Yeah.
Do you know something, though? Out of all of those black businesses, I'm just running through my mind, out of all those black businesses, the only thing left are the churches. I'm putting the churches into the black business, too, and the funeral homes. That's the only thing that you can find now that's still there. That was Greer's funeral home and Alexander's funeral home. What's the funeral director used to come out every morning with the spats on and the big...
Mr. Robinson's funeral.
That's out of where I could see it go because it was...
Yeah, Harrison went to...
Yeah.
Harrison.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the funeral homes in this neighborhood.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And the only thing left are the churches, which are moved to a different section, and the funeral homes.
So you only had Harrison over here. Mm-hmm. Harrison.
You had Harrison over here?
Yeah.
That's the only one. I was talking about the Brooklyn business.
Yeah, I know Harrison was out of here, but Robinson Funeral Home was there, mm-hmm. and Alexander, and Greer.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, in Brooklyn?
In Brooklyn.
Oh, you had another Carolina funeral home.
Carolina funeral home.
What was the name of that one? I don't know. Remember Mr. Peterson?
It was on McDowell Street.
Did Bob Houston have a funeral home for a short while on Second Street? Bob Houston, the police.
Yeah, Bob had.
Had the newspaper. Yeah. Charlotte Post was there. But our church moved from Third Ward to, it was torn down too, and it moved to, we had First Baptist Church West on mm-hmm. Oakland Avenue, yeah. So we on this side of town.
There are 14 black churches on Bayesford Road.
Now,
you said something about you weren't given a voice, you didn't have a choice. Was that the way, I mean, do any of you feel like there was a way to speak out against urban renewal? You know, what was the relationship with the mayor's office? Could you have, you know, could the parents have said something, or the people that were elders in the community have said
they
something?
They didn't provide that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
We tried to stop them from tearing down the school. We closed the Second Ward school. We went to court and everything. Because I remember leaving school, I was working, you know, in the school system here at that time, and we got off and went downtown to try to fight that, but it didn't help.
Well, you know, I think with almost everything that happened, the blacks got together, groups got together, and tried to speak out and let them know, that councilmen know how we felt about it, and hoping that they would have a change of mind, but their plans were already made.
But you know what? I thank God for the white fella, and he told me he was involved in it, and he told me this. Now, I was listening to him. He said the reason why they went ahead and disposed of that section of the city was because you had more rental property in there than you had black ownership in there. And the rental property people were ready to give up because they were the ones that made the money off of it. He said, and you can't stop progress. He said, that money is worth talking. He said, it just wasn't enough blacks to have homeowners like it was in Cherry. Most of the people in Cherry were black homeowners, and they were proud people because they could own a home.
Well, what do you think, what was the impression of how other communities responded to what was going on in Brooklyn? Did you get support from the other communities?
No. But you know what? I gave it some thought, and because I've been in this discussion a long time, many a time, I give it, this is my opinion of it. I'm only speaking for Price. Brooklyn needed urban renewal. It was time. I'm only speaking for me. I'm not saying you should, I don't know where Vermeer lived, but I do know where Mr. Blake lived. Mr. Blake had one of those old-fashioned looking homes that you would find in Charleston where the elite lived. And it shouldn't have.
That's where
Vermeer lived. That's where Vermeer, I never knew where Vermeer lived. But anyway, to look at some of the houses in there that blacks own. Blacks did own a few of those houses they owned in Brooklyn. I don't say a few, I don't know how
a
many.
A lot of homes were all homeowners.
But Fridays, I look at it wherein that certain parts of it had deteriorated so bad where the shotguns were.
Okay, but
they could have rebuilt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
they could have encouraged or made sure. See, the rental property was, see, that there again, you get the newspaper's perspective of what Brooklyn was like.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. It was the ghetto. Mm-hmm. It was because of the rental owners, people that owned the rental houses, they would not fix those houses
right.
up.
Yeah, that's
and
right.
That's what they should have done, should have made them either move out, do something with those houses. And they and see, the Observer, that was one of the things that I was concerned about during Black History Month when we had to ask, you know, the question about whether the Observer, you know, pictured, you know, things about blacks. No, they didn't. The only thing that, and I was on WFAE radio with, Mike Collins, and I said to them, that what the Observer showed about Brooklyn was only the shotgun houses.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I left off the other little part, the little picking children.
Yeah.
But those people, those are the things that the Observer showed about.
They never showed
how Brooklyn had elite people,
that's
homes,
right.
And you might have had a shotgun house next door to you, but still,
but you never saw that
far about it.
But you know what happened, Vermeer? And this guy, I listened to him, and he knew what he was talking about. What they did, the landowners got together, and if you did not want to sell, they were going to find some way to rezone your property.
Or condemn it.
There was no way out. There was no way out.
You take McCora Heights up here. Mm-hmm. Let's see, McCora Heights, where I used to live behind the waterworks.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. McCora owned all that property, which
mm-hmm.
he knew.
Yeah.
And he owned the property where the waterworks mm-hmm. is, too. Mm-hmm. But he was not going to sell that, Dr. Mm-hmm. McCora, where the waterworks is.
Mm-hmm.
So they condemned it.
Mm-hmm.
They condemned it.
What happened with the housing? You know where you all had your housing? How they decided to run the highway through there, right?
I stayed out of school for that hearing.
Yeah.
I heard show them downtown to hear how they could put that highway through that by the railroad track that was in the back of the house way back
mm-hmm.
then. He showed them exactly how they could do it. Because I still have that newspaper at home. It's a yellow paper, because it went in my backyard and showed them how they could run that highway now. Because when I get on there, every time I get on there, they say we ride through our dining room.
And this is when they were built.
Yeah, that's one of the things. Most of these decisions that they make locally and statewide are done deals.
Yeah.
Most of them.
Yes.
Urban renewal in Brooklyn. Yes. I was at a zone hearing meeting a couple weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
It was at the Y. McQuarrie was not downtown. The cars were going to build some apartment houses. And we said we're going to be surrounded by this. What quality are they going to be? You know?
Mm-hmm.
And I told the man, Jay Ferguson was down there with him, the junior. He was with the Claus. I said, I think I'm wasting my time sitting here. I say, is this a done deal? Or just a perfunctory meeting? That's all it was, a perfunctory meeting, to say that we did meet as a committee. So it's going to be done. It's going to be done. We heard
it. Because they bring it to you most, it's already done.
Are we getting away from the wheel?
No.
That's the partner.
But right back up a little bit and say how your houses were built. Those people had just built your home.
Yeah, we had just.
See, those houses
were. We had just built that house.
Back up a little bit.
There were 8 houses on that hill that they
built. Yeah,
you know where it was. You've been there. 8 houses on that hill. Mm-hmm. 8 of us. And we were there 3 months when we found out that we had to go. But we stayed there 7 years longer before they finalized the thing. And the one who built the property, what's his name, Marsh Broadway, you remember Marsh Broadway
building?
We were not quite ready to build. But we always wanted to split. Everyone's on the hill. There was on the hill and the house was on the hill. So how we found out, this is Mr. McCoy's daughter, Miss Vatican, she and Ann's mother's in Mary McLeod Book Club, and she's talking to Ann. And so I got in touch with the man, and we put a deposit on it. And then the next thing he knew, he was telling me, we was going to buy it. You had to build away, right away. He was on the city planning committee, we found out, commission. He knew about it. He was, that's why he rushed everybody to build. He was on the planning commission, Marsh Broadway. So we were there 3 months, and before we found out, and we stayed there 7 years longer before they settled with us. Now, the only saving grace about that was that the federal government was involved.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because we would have lost.
Yeah.
And it was really almost a blessing in disguise, because they paid us double, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because only because the federal government was involved.
Yeah,
that's true.
But he knew that. He was on the planning commission. He knew that.
Some people
that's
moved
why we
their
had
houses
rush. That's why he rushed us to
build.
Yeah, some people moved their houses
and
added to them.
Jack Martin, Dr. Durant, Evelyn Floyd, Ruth Johnson, those four moved. There were 8 of us.
Mm-hmm.
Four of them moved.
Mm-hmm.
The
whole lot.
Carter's, Bob Carter, Miss Bluford bought his house, Mr. Bluford, you know, and they took the brick off and moved.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the rest of the building.
But we talked about how things, you know, do we have any
input.
Political. We didn't have
no
political power. Calvin
was
with for your assistant superintendent. You was a principal at one time, and then assistant. And he can tell you about how things are already done deals when we find out. I'm sure you know what's going to happen. Like when they closed our school.
Yeah.
When they closed Second World. And I understand that was done because some of the whites are going to have to, you know, according to the zoning, we're going to have to attend Second Ward, and rather than do that, throw the school down.
That was the underlying.
Yes. Can you talk more about that situation?
Well, you don't get it all. It's just handed down to you that this is going to happen. And it happens. I think back when they first started busing, it was late in the afternoon, and my boss man called me. At that time, I was director of special education, and it's about 4:30 in the afternoon, and he said the superintendent had called him and told him that they could not, from the transportation department, do the special education busing, that we would have to do the planning. And so there were about four other ladies who were supervisors in special education. And it wound up that the boss man and I were the ones to do the transportation of special education. And by court order, we had to do it. And so we stayed up all night long reading the map, locating the kids, and routing the buses. And we finally got it, but we found out there were a lot of streets on the map that didn't exist. Mm-hmm. And it took us another week to really straighten it out. Mm-hmm. That was a big hit. That was a done deal, too. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have two questions left, and I'll reintroduce the question in a minute, but I'll go ahead and ask the three of you. Okay, hold on just a minute. Okay, we've been talking about urban renewal, and I know that they're talking about rebuilding downtown. What lessons do you think the politicians should take from the experience in Brooklyn? What could have been done differently? How could have been done differently?
I think they should involve the people, whether they're people with power or no power. They should be involved in the very beginning when they talk about renewal of anything, when it comes to human lives.
Not just talk to them. They need to listen and try to do some of the things that people suggest. You have the town meetings and what have you, they'll have them, and it's just like pouring water on a duck's back, you know. It's just you talk about it, and that's the end of it. And they still do exactly what they plan to do. That's the way it seems. Now, they could, if they would just listen and try to accommodate the people, you know, listen to their voices and try to do some of the things that the people want.
As Calvin said, they should involve the larger society. That's it. The people.
Last question. Given everything you know now, and looking back, what are some of the positives that came out of urban renewal? And we've already discussed some of the negatives.
Well, I think that it afforded better living conditions for people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that is one of the positive things that came out of it.
And affordable, all of it really means affordable. Mm-hmm.
Well, I just want to thank you, Jeffy, for being involved today. This is very helpful, and I appreciate your help. If you can think of anything else, just give us a call.
Thank you.